Greetings and welcome back to our shiur, our study of Psalm 30, Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayit David. In the first installment, we went over the psalm, and I raised several questions about the opening pasuk, or the title pasuk. First of all, the doubling of Mizmor and Shir. Second of all, Chanukah Tabayit David. What house is it that David dedicated? I raised several possibilities that are suggested by some of the commentators to solve this problem. But none of them are really very satisfactory. And then the larger question, which is the relationship between the 12 verses that make up the body of the text to the title, Chanukah Tabayit David, which is a little bit difficult to understand. So, as promised, in this, the main shiur on this psalm, we're going to take a look at the message, as it were, of the psalm itself, and from that hopefully be able to decipher what may be going on in its relationship both to the title and to Chanukah. As I mentioned in Masechet Sofrim, there is an indication that this was, or at least was, whether in the Mikdash or not, was practiced as the psalm of the day during the days of Chanukah, leading to the various minhagim, the various customs with which we are familiar. We begin with the assumption, as I mentioned in the previous shiur, that this psalm is sung by someone who is bringing a korban todah, a Thanksgiving korban. As we could tell from the context, is someone who was deathly ill and was spared and is now healthy and is bringing a korban to thank Hashem. And it is really made up of three segments. One segment is the present day telling of what happened to him. Etc. And in the second segment, he turns and gives a flashback as to what he experienced, his sense of serenity and invulnerability when things were going well, that was shattered by God, as it were, looking away in the way that he presents it, and we hear about his tefillah, his prayer to God, and the parak concludes with us going back to the present time and the conclusions that he has come to, which are that you have brought my sadness into happiness, you've turned my sadness into a dance, and I will thank you forever. So what is the message of this entire piece? And from there, then we'll move outwards to understand the connection with Chanukah. I have to remember that he begins by praising God, and in a beautiful imagery, I will exalt you and raise you up because you have raised me up. You have not allowed my enemies to rejoice over me. We understand that he was sick and he cried out to God. Now, note that in the first section, which is Pasuk Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, and Vav, in that section, there are two pieces. One piece in which he is talking to God, and I've outlined this on the handout that you can access here on the webpage and print out, that he has called out to God, that we're privy to his prayers of thanksgiving, and then he turns to the assemblage and asks them to sing along and uses particular words in doing so. Now note the words that he uses. For instance, he begins with Aromimcha. Note that the very last word of the entire parak is Odeka, Adonai Elohai Le'olam Odeka, which is very much parallel to Aromimcha. So the entire chapter is formed as an inclusio in which the beginning and the end have the same idea. I will praise you, I will exalt you. And notice that at the beginning he says, you have not allowed my enemies to rejoice over me, but towards the end of the parak he mentions Simcha in the opposite vein of, you have girded me with rejoicing. A little bit later on in the first section, he encourages the people around to Zamru, give song. And what is it that he says at the very end of the parak? Leman Yizamercha. So he says that he himself will sing to God and not be silent. Towards the end of his observation that he shares with the assemblage, he says, Ki rega biapo chayim birtzono, there is life birtzono, and that is a word that he gets to in the middle section. And we see all sorts of ways in which the first section, which is his current prayer and observation to the assemblage, the middle section, which is the flashback, and the final section, which is coming back into the present time and its conclusions that he's come to, are all related. And you can see that on the page in the bold print and the different kinds of font typefaces that have been indicated there. But to cut to the quick, in the first section, he is describing his thanksgiving to God for saving him. Now, he then turns to the assemblage and says, you should all give thanks to God because, and he gives an explanation, you should realize that there is eternal life when you are in God's graces. When he turns away, that's for a moment. So things not going well for a moment is a temporary aberration. Proper the way that things are is good. And he says, you go to sleep at night, sometimes things are terrible, by Erev Yom Boker, you wake up in the morning, and you are singing. And then he turns around and says, there is a danger in this sort of attitude, and that is the danger that I fell into when I was younger, in other words, before this event took place, and when I was under the misconception that things would always be great. Invulnerability. What was that? Bal emot leolam. I will never fall. This is what I thought. So what happened? Birtzoncha, again, associated chayim birtzono. Adonai birtzoncha, when you had grace with me, then you stood me up like a strong mountain. You turned your face away, and I was confused. In other words, now there's an application of the general observation of the previous psukim, which is that when God is gracious with you, that's the permanent situation, but there is always the possibility of God turning his face away from you. And then you have to ask the question, why would God turn his face away from you? And that's something that we're going to get to in the overall message of the parak. He then comes and says that what his prayer was. I called out to you, and I said, what is the value of my silence? Biriti el shachat, of me going down to the pit, which of course goes back to the beginning of the chapter, when he describes that he was down in the pit and God saved him from going down, from mi yor divor, and his biriti el shachat. And then he says, hayodcha afar. Now notice what he says, will the earth thank you? And what's the very last word of the parak? Leolam odeka. Again, this theme of thanking you. So he says that his argument when things were terrible was, God, what's the value? What do you gain from having me die? I won't be able to give thanks to you. Please help me. And now back into the present, he says, Hafachta mispedi l'macholi, you have taken my mourning and turned it into a circle dance and girded me with happiness. For what purpose? Now notice very carefully what he says. L'man yizamecha chavod v'lo yidom, so that I will sing to you and not be silent, and not be silent. Adonai Elohai le'olam odeka. What does le'olam odeka mean? I will forever thank you. How is that any different than the beginning? So even though the beginning of the chapter is already presented after he has gone through this experience, he is walking us through his own mindset in the sequence. He begins by saying, Arumimcha Adonai ki dilitani, I will exalt you because you have saved me. Meaning, when you do something good for me, I thank you. When you go out of your way to take care of me, I go out of my way to recognize you and thank you. Now, I may on a regular basis mention how great God is, but I don't feel a sense of thanksgiving for God except when I realize that I'm in times of need and God saves me. What's the ultimate lesson of the entire chapter? What was the ultimate lesson of his entire sickness? And perhaps, if you will, what is the entire lesson to be gained from God turning his face away? He turns his face away for a moment so that you can appreciate what it's like to be away, so that you can fully appreciate what it's like to be in his graces. Rega biapo is there for you to understand Chaim Birtzono. The moment of God turning you away is there for you to appreciate what it is to be in God's good graces. Much as we never really fully appreciate the use of our legs until we sprain an ankle, and I'm using a very simple temporary kind of circumstance, we don't appreciate the use of our voice until we lose it. And on a much more powerful level, we perhaps don't appreciate the importance of a loved one to us until their presence is threatened, shall we say. In the same way, he says, I was thanking God when I recognized God doing something for me, but not on a regular plane. What changes at the end? I will sing to you and never be silent. And the key word in the entire parak is le'olam odeka. Now notice what this le'olam comes to repair. In Pasuk Chet, he says, in Pasuk Zayin, he says, V'ani amarti v'shalvi bal emot le'olam. I said, when things were good, I said, I would never, never fall. Le'olam. And it is that exact same le'olam that is repaired here, le'olam odeka. I thought that I would never fall. I would always be fine. In other words, I took my good life for granted. You stepped away from me for a moment, you turned your face away from me for a moment, and I realized that it's not to be taken for granted, that I have to be thankful for every moment of life and all of the blessings that come with it, and therefore my commitment as a result of this is that I will always thank you, not just thank you when you intervene, but I will always thank you, recognizing every moment of life is in a sense an intervention. Okay, that is the lesson of this chapter, the lesson of this man who was sick, who got better, and shared not only his personal experience, but much more significantly, the message that he gained from this experience with the assemblage, so that they would learn it, and that they indeed would not make the same mistake of taking God's great blessings for granted. So much for the message. Now, again, what does this have to do either with the title? How does the title connect? How do we solve the riddle of the title? And how do we connect all of this with Chag HaChanukah? For that, we'll have to take a look at several psukim, which are on the first handout that is associated on the linked on the webpage. And that is a series of psukim. If you look at the first associated verse, you see that the imagery used by the singer here, even though undoubtedly the singer, the composer, was talking about a personal disease in which he was evidently talking about a personal medical threat from which he was saved, nonetheless, the wording that he used is evocative of national circumstances. Take a look at the first passage underneath, the first passage on the page, and you will see that God says to Moshe, that when the day comes that Bnei Yisrael do avodah zarah and stray away from God, says v'chara apivo v'yomahu v'azavtim v'histartif fanai mayhem v'hayal le'echol. I will turn my face away from them; they will be devoured. Umutzau raot rabot v'tzarot v'yamar b'yomahu aloh al ki ein elohai b'kibim mitzauni haraot ha'ele. And they will say, ah, because God is not in my presence, that's why all of this evil has befallen me. In other words, people will realize that it is the lack of God's presence that is making them vulnerable to all the threats. And then he says, Va'anochi haster astir panai bayomahu. I will indeed hide my face from them. Al-kol hara asher asa. And this, of course, famously is associated midrashically with the name Esther, Esther min atar minayin, etc. Now, that takes the personal image that's presented in the parak, he starta fanecha iti nivhal, and shows that it is borrowed from a much earlier passage in Sefer Dvarim that is presented not on a personal but on a national level. But that still doesn't connect us with Chag HaChanukah. So we have to go back in history a little bit. Well before Chag HaChanukah, and one note, especially about the celebration of Chanukah, is that even though the rededication of the altar and the rededication of the building in December 164 BCE happened a good 350 years after the dedication of the Mikdash and after the rebuilding of the Mikdash, after the return from Babel, there is little question that the community, both in 515 BCE when it was rededicated and all the way up until the year 164, felt that their Mikdash was somewhat pathetic relative to the old Mikdash. And the reason for that is quite simple. Besides the fact that up until this time and later, the physical building was not nearly as imposing as Solomon's Temple, really until Herod's time, Besides that, the fact that Solomon's temple always stood, the first Mikdash, always stood as not only a symbol of, but very really functioned as a core in the independent and sovereign Jewish state of Yehuda, or of Yisrael. And now, when the second Mikdash was built, it was built under the thumb of the Persians, even though they allowed us to build, then they suspended the building for 20 years, and how much we could do there and what we could not do was not under our control. When the events of the winter of 164 BCE took place, for the first time since 597 BCE, there was a standing Mikdash that was under Jewish sovereignty, independent, and self-directed. And this, of course, is a magnificent thing, and if you look at the Rambam in Perek Gimel of Hilchot Chanukah, Halacha Aleph, he seems to see that as the major miracle of Chanukah that's being celebrated. But we have to roll back a little bit further to understand what a shockwave the destruction of the Mikdash in 586 was. Because in Yirmiyahu Zion, the second passage on the page, which is part of a much larger chapter, in which the Navi is challenging those people who believe that God will never destroy his Mikdash. Remember, this is taking place at the beginning of the 6th century BCE, just before the Mikdash is in fact destroyed, saying there's lots of people who think God will never destroy his own house. It's his house, why would he destroy it? And Yirmiyahu says to them, "Al tiftachu el divrei alachem el divrei hasheker lemor." Do not believe what all of these lying people are saying, who say, "Hechal Adonai, Hechal Adonai, Hechal Adonai Hema." It's God's house, and he will never destroy it. And God says, go take a look at my place in Shiloh, and I had my Mishkan there, and then I destroyed it because of the Avodah Zarah that was involved. In other words, you see that there was an attitude that existed among the people before the destruction of the Mikdash that God will never destroy it. We can be sinful, we can behave how we are, we can enslave other Jews, look at Yirmiyahu Lamed Daled, we can be involved in Avodah Zarah, look in throughout Yirmiyahu, and in parts of Yeshayahu, we can be involved in all sorts of terrible things. Look at Malachim Bet, towards the end, about Menasheh. And nonetheless, God will never destroy his own house. That we take for granted. What was the shockwave that took place? God destroyed his own house. And that, of course, was something that was unthinkable to them. So what happens upon the return? When they return, it had to be part of the mentality of saying, we took the Mikdash for granted. By the way, we took Jewish sovereignty for granted. We took Jewish independence for granted. And all of these things were taken from us. But we took the existence of the Mikdash for granted. Now that God has given us a second chance, it's something that we have to commit to never taking for granted. We have to appreciate this great blessing that God has given us on a regular basis, and not just when it's threatened of being taken away, and God saves us, as he did in the case of Sancheriv and his attempted destruction and attack on Yerushalayim in the year 701 BCE. So, how do we do that? So, this is what I'd like to suggest. We look and we find that there is a song of thanksgiving that somebody composed, Beruach HaKodesh, because he took his life for granted, and then he got very sick, and when God healed him, he realized that he cannot take his life for granted. And beautifully, coincidentally or not coincidentally, this composer used some terms that for us are evocative. The first thing is he used the term, Histarta Fanecha, you turned your face away from me, which of course we're all familiar with on a national level from the Pasuk in Dvarim. But he used other terms. He said, Bal Emot, when things were great, I thought I would never crumble. Again, a verb that's used only in the context of buildings and mountains, not individuals. And yet this individual said, Bal Emot, I'll never fall. Not only that, but he says, Adonai Ritzoncha Hemata L'Hariyoz. When I was in your favor and your good graces, you stood me up like a strong mountain. So this individual described himself as a house that would never crumble, as a strong mountain, and then God turned his face away. And look at all of the terminology that's being used here that seems to be pointing directly towards a national experience of sense of invulnerability, which then comes crashing down as the mountain and the house crumble when God turns his face away. And so it's very easy to then adopt this personal song of thanksgiving about being saved from death when his health was failing, to then turn it into a national song of thanksgiving to God for being returned and restored to Tzion, to the newly rebuilt Mikdash. We had always taken for granted, and that now we realized we have to give thanks to God for. So what do we have? What I'd like to suggest is that there was an old song, and the song began, it was composed, Ruach HaKodesh, either by David or by somebody in honor of David, and he titled it appropriately, Mizmor LeDavid. That was his title. Along at the beginning of the period of the second Mikdash, or perhaps even later, the Kohanim, perhaps the Levi'im, added in three words into the title, Shir Chanukat HaBayit. And if you look at the handout, you'll see that Mizmor LeDavid I've made slightly bigger, Shir Chanukat HaBayit made slightly smaller, so you could see. The song was Mizmor LeDavid, Armimcha Adonai K'ditani V'lo Simachtoi V'ili. And then they added in those three words, Shir Chanukat HaBayit, to say this is a song that we sing in honor of the rededication of the house, that we now appreciate and will never take for granted, imitating or taking a page from this beautiful song composed by an individual who learned not to take his every breath for granted and to give thanksgiving to God for every day that he walked. A question that someone may raise is, but I was under the impression that David HaMelech was the composer of Tehillim. How could someone add words later on? So it's important to note that, and this really belongs to a whole different shiur of an introduction to Tehillim, but I'll note it briefly, that the opinions about the composition of Sefer Tehillim are far more complex than just that. Indeed, if you look through Chazal, you will find not one single opinion that maintains that David HaMelech was the sole composer of the Tehillim. The only one who seems to say that is Rav Sadia Gaon, and it's even unclear what he really means in that statement. But in Chazal, you don't find such a statement. In Chazal, Tehillim is an anthology of prayers. There's one opinion, Masachet Baba Batra, that David was the anthologizer, which means all the compositions happened before his time or by him, or in his time. And the other opinion that's found in Midrash Shir HaShirim Rabbah, Midrash Kohelet Rabbah, is that Tehillim continued to be composed all the way till the end of the era of prophecy, until the era of Ezra, well after the rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash, the rebuilding of the Mikdash, or the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. And that would indicate that it's certainly possible that there were people inspired by Ruach HaKodesh to take this particular parak, to add those three words into the title, which now explains the following. First of all, it explains the doubled phrase, Mizmor and Shir. The song was Mizmor LeDavid. You don't erase the words that are already there. We add Shir Chanukat HaBayit. Second of all, we understand why Chanukat HaBayit is there with David. It's not really originally there with David. It's a Shir Chanukat HaBayit added on to Mizmor LeDavid. But we now understand in a much more powerful sense the connection between the title and the song. The song is about a personal salvation. The title then extends it to be associated with national salvation and national appreciation for the great gift of return to Tzion and the rebuilding of the Mikdash. Why this would be the Shir Shel Yom on the days of Chanukah, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it seems clear that the Hashmonaim appreciated the great miraculous victory that they celebrated that they established in 164 with the liberation of the Mikdash to be the real full dedication of the Mikdash. They ultimately referred to part of it as Chanukat HaMizbeach, because an understanding that not only for the last 3 years it had been under Greek and idolatrous influence and control, but also the entire time it had lacked a major component of what made the first Mikdash special, which was that it was a Mikdash under Jewish sovereignty with the capital of Yerushalayim right next to the place of the Mikdash instead of a foreign capital that controlled it. And so as the celebration is really the proper celebration of the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, it is very appropriate for us every day during this week to sing to God and to give Him songs of thanksgiving in recreating and remembering the dedication of the Mikdash, and of course, as a lesson to us, to never, never take for granted the great blessings that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us every day, and to always be thankful for them. L'man zamercha chavod v'lo yidom, Adonai Elohai le'olam odecha.